I'm Abigail Galvan. Welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
There are 29 women who were subjected to unwanted abortions.
A landmark lawsuit against Minnesota's abortion laws claims women are coerced into abortions. We speak with the lead attorney.
So to date, we've had over 56,000 hits on the website and the app, serving 23,000 women in their particular needs.
State programs that are helping women and their families thrive. Pro-life icon Mississippi Attorney General Lynn Fitch shares success stories and weighs in on the current abortion landscape in the U.S.
They've learned to be incredibly creative and adaptive, much more so than people who don't have disabilities.
Raising awareness about the dignity of persons with disabilities. EWTN's Father Robert Spitzer explains the graces he's received living with a disability.
Therefore, Women's Life Care Center is compelled to seek the intervention of the court to help protect our clients' rights.
A landmark lawsuit against a state's abortion laws and abortion providers received its first hearing in federal court. Multiple pregnancy resource centers, a patient, and several medical doctors are challenging the constitutionality of Minnesota's abortion laws. They allege that the laws and practices have led to coerced abortions. Last Friday, during a press conference held by plaintiffs, not long after arguments were made, one woman shared her firsthand experience of what she said was a coerced abortion. It's an experience that a former abortion facility director, who is also suing the state, says is commonplace.
No one discussed the real nature of the abortion. No one asked how I felt about it. No one asked if I really wanted my child. The only thing one woman who met with me did was check to see if I signed the forms that were given to me. The abortion has haunted me ever since.
The workers at Planned Parenthood were forced to push and sell abortions. We were taught to tell the mothers that the people at the pregnancy health centers lied to women.
The plaintiffs hope that Minnesota's abortion laws will be declared unconstitutional. Abortion is legal throughout all 9 months of pregnancy in the state. Harold Cassidy, the lead attorney representing the plaintiffs, joins us now to further explain this case. Harold, thank you for joining us today. The stories shared at the press conference are heartbreaking and alarming. How many other stories have you heard about women being coerced into abortion?
This case is going to expose a national scandal that will reveal that a majority of the pregnant mothers subjected to abortions in this country are subjected to abortions that are a result of coercion, pressure, deception, and in many instances, they're waivers of fundamental rights that are unknowing and uninformed. There are, just in the record in this particular case, there are 29 women who were subjected to unwanted abortions who submitted affidavits. Other witnesses reveal in their experiences, hundreds and even thousands of women who are being subjected that way. There simply are no protections of the mother's fundamental interest in her relationship with the child, contrary to every single decision that ever came down from the Supreme Court in terms of protecting and a state's duty to protect the fundamental parental rights of any mother.
Now, a hearing was held to dismiss the case entirely. Do you think they have a leg to stand on?
No. That doesn't mean the court won't do it. In these particular cases in the past, in our experience, we always win the cases in the upper courts. It doesn't matter in a large measure to what the result is in a district court. Of course, we have to make important records. We have to create the record. But in the end, it has to be determined ultimately in the upper courts, and that's the U.S. Court of Appeals. In this instance, that's the Eighth Circuit, and of course, the Supreme Court.
And when do you expect the judge to make a decision?
Well, of course, that's up to the court. But in my experience, we would anticipate maybe 2 weeks. The court will make a determination and write an opinion explaining the reason for her decision.
The complaint argues that the relationship between a mother and child is sacred and constitutionally protected. Can you explain this protection in the Constitution? And is this the first time this kind of argument has been brought to court?
You know, we identify three different rights. Every mother has a protected 14th Amendment interest in the welfare of her child. Nowhere is that interest more implicated than when someone's threatening to kill her child. Yet, there's no protections. So we have in the case law, coming down from the Supreme Court, that the state has an absolute obligation to prove, by clear and convincing evidence, any grounds for terminating this relationship. The state assumes that every mother who ever walks into an abortion clinic wants to waive their fundamental right. The Supreme Court of the United States has said that no state can make such an assumption. They have to assume that they want to keep their rights.
Well, Harold, thank you for the incredibly important work you're doing and shining a light on this scandal. And I pray that the case goes well so the reparations can be made.
You're welcome.
We continue to follow the lawsuit filed by Planned Parenthood against a provision in the Big Beautiful Bill Act that revokes Medicaid funding for abortion clinics. A federal judge out of Boston, Indira Talwani, blocked the provision and directed the Department of Health and Human Services to ensure Medicaid funding continues to be dispersed to Planned Parenthood. A hearing on the case is set for July 18th. While taxpayer funding for abortion is argued on the federal level, we turn to how one state is using taxpayer dollars to promote family and life. A program called Mississippi Access to Maternal Assistance, or MAMA, helps connect pregnant women and new mothers to resources available in the state, from ultrasounds and prenatal care to food and baby supplies. The program supports mothers on multiple levels: access to food assistance and baby formula, health insurance and counseling, child support, and job training. It's a comprehensive system led by multiple state agencies to help mothers start off on the right foot and stay on a path of success. Mississippi Attorney General Lynn Fitch established the MAMA program. An iconic pro-life leader, Attorney General Fitch successfully defended a state law limiting abortion at 15 weeks in the Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health Organization case that made its way to the U.S. Supreme Court. The historic win overturned Roe v. Wade and changed the legal landscape of abortion in the United States. I had the privilege of speaking with her about these programs and the current pro-life challenges facing our nation. How many women has the MAMA program helped since you launched it?
Well, thank you for having me today. It has been amazing. The MAMA program has very much served so many people across our state. To date, you know, it's an app and it's also a website. The app has been amazing because so many women have reached out, looked at the app. So to date, we've had over 56,000 hits on the website and the app, serving 23,000 women in their particular needs, which is, again, incredible. What a God thing to have this available technology so that these women can have their needs serviced. That it might be childcare, it could be financial assistance, it could be, I just need a car seat. But here's the most important part about the MAMA program. It is comprised of public, private, and faith-based resources.
And was it always an app, or was that a recent iteration?
Well, we started out initially with a website, and we knew that most everyone has a phone and having that accessibility. So we created the MAMA app, just mama.ms.gov. And we see so many users. We see repeat users. And it's just been so accessible to mothers-to-be or young mothers.
It's incredible that you're meeting these women where they're at. Shifting gears a little bit, the One Big Beautiful Bill is establishing job requirements for safety net programs like Medicaid and the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. How does this impact these programs on the state level? And are there plans already in place to manage this?
Well, we're very grateful for President Trump and his administration and being so thoughtful and having this bill, because it is very helpful. It's going to provide a great insight and for the state of Mississippi. But in that regard, you know, certainly with SNAP, nutrition, I think it's going to be incredibly important as we look at nutritional values for our children, for our families, for everyone across the state of Mississippi. But, you know, on the work, I think that instills such great pride. You know, we should be giving an empowerment to, you know, a hand up, not just a hand out. So I'm excited about that potential to add great value and self-confidence for individuals across our state,
which is so necessary for people's well-being. Now, I'm sure you've heard that a judge has blocked a provision in the Budget Reconciliation Act that revokes Medicaid funding for abortion clinics, at least until the hearing this Friday. Can you share your thoughts on the congressional move to block funding for a year from Planned Parenthood, as well as on the lawsuit?
Well, I think certainly the lawsuit, you know, we've seen so many suits be brought against this administration to really try to impede our women to get into the opportunities that women have. And I think trying to go into this area is, again, quite the overreach. You know, for Mississippi, we've had a moratorium here ever since the Dobbs case to disallow funding to be spent for Planned Parenthood.
That's incredible. You guys have been leading that charge. Now, Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri is talking about raising the minimum wage as a pro-family initiative. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it certainly needs to be addressed and looked at and a determination to be made. I think as we look at the numbers and the propensity of how would the value, how will it affect your low range, how will it help families. I think there's some amazing studies being done to determine where does that fall out? And again, how do we best serve those with a raise in our minimum wage?
Well, Madam Attorney General, it's been such a pleasure to have you here with us. Thank you for the work that you do.
Thank you.
A top official with the United Nations is warning governments to protect women and stop gender transition procedures on children. In a report, Reem Al-Salem, a UN human rights official, recommends governments stop using gender-neutral language and ensure that the terms women and girls are only used to describe biological females. She says proper terminology is especially important when violence is committed against women, so as to effectively recognize and prevent future violence and discrimination. Al-Salem also calls for a prohibition on medical treatment of children suffering with gender dysphoria, calling the interventions experimental and warning that the effects are irreversible. A bid by a drug manufacturer to overturn West Virginia's pro-life laws has failed. Gen BioPro makes a generic form of the abortion drug mifepristone. The company challenged West Virginia's restrictions on access to chemical abortion pills, arguing that the Food and Drug Administration's approval of the drug should preempt state law. On Tuesday, the 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals found that FDA regulation and approval of the deadly drug does not override state law. This week marks 2 years since the approval of an over-the-counter oral contraceptive, the O-pill. The Food and Drug Administration approved the drug in July of 2023, and it officially hit store shelves in March of 2024. Oral contraceptives have been on the market since the 1970s, but always required a prescription from a doctor. The availability of the O-pill over-the-counter makes it as accessible as Tylenol or Advil. Eliminating the need for a doctor's appointment is a move that poses a variety of health risks to women who take it, according to experts.
Hormonal birth control is not simply a vitamin that a woman will take every day. These are powerful synthetic steroid hormones. Synthetic hormonal birth control significantly increases a woman's risk of depression and suicidal risk.
The church teaches that the conjugal act must remain open to life and that contraception is objectively immoral. July 16th marks Disability Awareness Day. 35 years ago this month, the Americans with Disabilities Act, or ADA, was signed into law by President George H.W. Bush, marking a new era of inclusion in the United States.
And today we're here to rejoice in and celebrate another Independence Day, one that is long overdue. And with today's signing of the landmark Americans for Disabilities Act, every man, woman, and child with a disability can now pass through once closed doors into a bright new era of equality, independence, and freedom.
The ADA is a civil rights law that ensures people with disabilities have the same rights and opportunities as every other citizen in areas including public accommodations and government services, employment, and transportation. During this Jubilee Year of Hope, the church held a beautiful jubilee of people with disabilities that drew thousands of participants to Rome. Those attending passed through the Holy Door, took part in Mass and Adoration, and had their confessions heard from priests who were specifically trained to work with those with disabilities. The two-day event in April aimed at not only celebrating the faith, but also raising awareness of the dignity of all of God's children.
The most important thing is that we are people like everyone, and we do the same things, but yes, we need a little bit of help. We need to be helped. But together we can do all the things.
Prego per un mondo migliore.
I pray for a better world. I pray for a world where inclusion becomes a normality. I'm blind from birth, but for me this is not a problem. I don't experience it as a problem. I experience it rather as a possibility, because I look at the world with different eyes.
Il mondo con occhi diversi.
Participants hailed from more than 90 countries. Father Robert J. Spitzer, S.J., president of the Magis Center in California and host of Father Spitzer's Universe, began to lose his sight when he was in his 30s. He joined me a short time ago to discuss this life-changing event, the reality of living with a disability, and the graces he has gained. Father Spitzer, you were diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa in your 30s. Can you tell us about this condition and what it was like to receive the diagnosis?
Yes, I was having trouble seeing when I was in Rome in my third year of theology. I went to a retinal specialist there in Rome. He indicated to me that I did have a retinal problem and that they wanted me to be put in an Italian hospital. I said, no. I went back to the United States right away. I got the diagnosis of retinitis pigmentosa, at which point I was told, you know, by the time you get to about 60, you're probably going to go blind. And they gave me a kind of a little bit of a future calendar of, about how that was going to take place. And I was in such a state of shock, you know, I knew right away I'm going to lose my driver's license. I'm going to, you know, how am I even going to finish my doctoral dissertation? How am I going to do, you know, I was just asking a million questions, a million miles an hour. And I was just thinking, Lord, where are you in all of this? And, you know, eventually, you know, I thought, is this kind of an indication that maybe I'm not supposed to be a priest? Is this kind of, I get up to the point of ordination, and then, you know, the word comes down, and my provincial really disabused me of that viewpoint by saying, what spirit are you listening to? So when I got that question back from him, I thought, okay, I got to get my whole mind readjusted.
That's incredible, Father. Now, you mentioned just what it was like to hear that diagnosis. Now, people make assumptions about those with disabilities. What do you think we should know from your perspective?
I just think people with disabilities, first and foremost, they've learned to be incredibly creative and adaptive, much more so than people who don't have disabilities, to be honest with you, because we tend, you know, when my first 30 years of my life, I tend to take everything for granted, right? Mm-hmm. I'm just going to pop into the car. I don't have to arrange a ride. I'm just going to go through the airport. I don't have to worry about, you know, how I'm going to get to the gate and see the thing properly and so forth and so on. So, you know, you never think about it. You just take it for granted. And I think, you know, people with disabilities, they have a real sense of not taking life for granted, of being thankful when things go right, of being extraordinarily thankful when people are helping them and they don't have to help, right? I think people with disabilities recognize the goodness of people, compassion of people. You have to learn how to accept compassion, mm-hmm. and you got to have to You have to learn how to accept the fact that you're no longer self-sufficient in the same way you were. And so, it gets some used to, getting used to. But you do get in the end result a deep humility and a deep gratitude for others and a deep gratitude for God. And I think, you know, people with disabilities, as you can see often, they have some of the deepest relationships with God because you're so utterly dependent on the Lord for so many different things, you know, and I certainly am in the day-to-day activities, I'm dependent, but also on the big long-term activities, I'm very dependent on the Lord. He keeps, you know, giving me great people to work with, you know, and of course, all the opportunities. He just opens those doors of opportunity.
And now, Father, disability advocates are launching lawsuits against states with assisted suicide laws. Many claim they are targets of these laws. Can you weigh in on this disturbing trend?
Absolutely. I've been working against physician-assisted suicide for years, but, the whole idea, that disabled people are not going to be hurt by these laws. Absolutely, they're going to be hurt. The pressure is going to be put on them. They're basically going to be told, look, your life is not as good as other people's lives. Of course, they're not looking at the viewpoint on life from the quality of love, the quality of service, the quality of wisdom that can be given by a disabled person. They're looking at, do you have the ability to get in your car and drive? Or do you have the ability to just read your own text? Or are you going to have computer enhancements or somebody to help you or whatever the case may be? But there always is the brandishing of this idea that your life is not as worthy as other people's lives. And, of course, we know what's going on in Switzerland and the Netherlands. The pressure is put on them. If you have a disability or if you have a lot of depression, maybe the best thing for you is just get it over with right now. Nobody would want to live with your low quality of life. Well, when you got that shadow overhanging you, and really a sword of Damocles overhanging you, it is really difficult for people with disabilities to view their lives as worthwhile again. And so people tell me that all the time. They just say, oh, look, Father, I just get a great deal of satisfaction seeing you doing all these things when you're blind, and you're going blind even when you were university president. If you can do it, I just get this sense that I can do it too. And my life is worthwhile and you don't have to throw in the towel or get pressured to move yourself off the proverbial life scene. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Father, just for shining a light on just the true dignity of the human and not being a measure of what we can do, but who we are and our inherent dignity. Thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you so much. Great to be with you.
We are so grateful that Father Spitzer was able to join our show. He had a lot more to say about his experiences. To view the extended version of his interview, be sure to watch it on our EWTN YouTube page. Coming up, sharing the beauty of the Basilica of the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception. The incredible church is covered with exquisite artwork, and now that beauty is being shared with people who are deaf and blind. We explain how when we return. Welcome back. The Basilica of the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception in Washington, D.C. is now offering accessible tours for people who experience deaf and blindness, a move inspired by the Vatican Museums. ASL speaking tour guides, along with tactile experiences, are available as part of the Deaf and Blind Tour Initiative, started in April. The tour features a Lego model of the Basilica and a modified tour script so as to encourage participation and raise awareness of this underserved community.
I felt it was a very moving moment because I felt for the first time maybe what it's like for them when they're the exception of a group of maybe 1,000 people at Mass to be the exception and to rely on something else that I don't usually need. Really, it's the purpose of who we are and what we do. We're welcoming people, to welcome people from all areas And not only just religions, nationalities, but even in this physical way.
Many have already taken advantage of the accessible tours, happy for the chance to fully participate in the learning experiences the Basilica has to offer. This week, we celebrate the 175th birthday of a well-known saint and patron of the pro-life movement, Francis Xavier Cabrini. She is not only the patroness of migrants working in the slums of New York City serving Italian immigrants, but also the first canonized American citizen. She represented the church's teaching on protecting the dignity of migrants, welcoming the stranger, and answering the cry of the foreigner. She also established hospitals and cared for the sick and dying. Mother Cabrini, pray for us. That does it for this edition of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Be sure to like and follow us on our social media channels. You can find us at EWTN Pro-Life on X, Facebook, and Instagram. And sign up for our newsletter, The Pro-Life Pulse, EWTN.com/pro-life. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.